Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining us as always, Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, at A.H. Malcolm on the Twitterses. We didn't get a chance to do this last week, so it's been a couple of weeks, Andrew. I missed you.
Yeah. Well, I missed you too, and I'm glad you got your happy shirt back.
I do have my happy shirt back. This is my happy shirt. and it's just in time, too, because I have to cover Super Tuesday, and that's always a grind.
A super shirt for Super Tuesday.
Yeah, actually, by the time this goes up, it will be in the middle of the day on Super Tuesday. And I mean, there's a lot of work we're going to have. I think, was it 7 states or 8 states that are going to the polls tomorrow, including Texas. So sometime in the middle of the day, I'm going to have to figure out how to get to the voting booth. I don't think there's anything all that terribly interesting on our ballots, but just the same. Our primary ends at 8 p.m. here. It's our, I think, 9 in some cases, but I'm going to try to get in there early.
Yeah. I do the early voting thing. So I voted last week.
Yeah, you know, there looks like there's a dozen or more states that are going tomorrow. That's like 30 years ago, Super Tuesday was 7 states. Now we're like 12 or 13 or 14. I mean, we're going Alaska to Vermont.
I think it's a third of the delegates.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and in neither party is there really any suspense about this, right? Now, we had Nikki Haley finally won a primary. Did you see this?
Yeah, D.C.
She won Washington, D.C. And God bless her. I understand that you have to work with the material you've got, right? But I found it very amusing that a Republican candidate was arguing that a win in D.C. was momentum for the rest of the race.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's true, that. But it shows, to me anyway, to my eyes, it shows her appeal across the board. I mean, she's done what, 34 at 40% in the previous states. And in a way, this is a warning signal for Trump. He won't take it as a warning signal, but you expect, and he's running as an incumbent president, as is Joe, and you expect him to clean up. And Trump has won, but he hasn't cleaned up. And in Iowa, I think it were 51% of, was it 51 or 49% of the delegates voted for somebody else. And if you're an, quote, incumbent president, and 40% of South Carolina is voting for someone else, I would take that as a need to branch out and broaden your audience. He's not. He's still attacking Nikki Haley. If it's so certain that he's going to be the nominee, he could already start a general election campaign and start reaching out. Instead, he's battering her for her Indian name and immigrant parents and her absent husband, who happens to be an Army major and is deployed in Africa. I mean, Trump would need Haley voters. I don't think he'd get them, but he would need them to reach out to them and start being gracious about it. And she's worked very hard, and she gave me a good tour as an ambassador at the UN. And I don't understand it. It's like he doesn't want to win.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. My opinion is that he just likes to slug.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if he's punching down. I mean, he'll swing on anybody. This is the whole outer borough Queens guy sort of persona, right?
Yeah.
You know, which he really embraced in the 90s, I guess it probably was, maybe even a little later than that, when it became very apparent that the cultural elite was never really going to warm up to him. Because prior to that, he was sort of like this, he had this sort of urbane William F. Buckley sort of affectation. If you ever watched interviews with him in the early to mid 1980s, but when he got involved in professional wrestling, I think he was committing to the bit prior to that, and that's why he got involved in professional wrestling. But he's been like that ever since, where he just, his whole persona is to make anybody who's opposing him or criticizing him into, you know, the villain in the ring, and to continue beating up on them as long as they're in the ring. It's the reason why he was going after Ron DeSantis for, you know, for his height, and calling him Meatball and Ron DeSanctimonious. Even after it became apparent that DeSantis was not going to beat him.
Yeah.
That was really just a brief moment in time between the actual Iowa results and when DeSantis decided to put an end to it. It was just a few days, but he was still on the attack with DeSantis up until the day that DeSantis withdrew. I think all of that would stop with Haley the day she withdraws. And as long as she's not going to withdraw, he's just going to continue using her as a punching bag, because that's what he does. I don't even think it's a strategy.
You're right. No, I agree with you. You're absolutely right. And that tells me that this is more about him and his need to punch than it is than it is about winning and being president again. And I mean, he had a Supreme Court win with Colorado, but since I liked a lot of his policies, probably most of them, but like you say, it becomes about him, and he attracts people that are like him for his staff, and they flake off, and we have the turmoil, and then he starts attacking them. And I think people are tired of that, and Biden. And to the extent he's aware of what he's doing, but his handlers, are just praying that the Trump antipathy, I don't think it's as great as it used to be because he's been absent for a while, basically, but that the Trump antipathy continues this time and carries Biden through.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's going to work.
I don't think it's going to work either. I want to spend more time on Biden here, because you've got a couple pieces up about Biden in over at Red State and VIP stuff that I want to get to. Just to kind of close the loop, though, on these Super Tuesday contests. I mean, we're going to have the embeds. We're going to have live results. It will be interesting to see how things roll out. But I don't think there's a state here on the list that I'm looking at that Nikki Haley's going to win. And I don't think, I don't think that there's donors left in the mix here who are going to keep funding Nikki Haley, because there's really no path for her to win the nomination. And we've talked about the idea that, well, she's sticking around in case something happens with Trump, right? But if something happens with Trump, either he's unable or unwilling to seek the nomination or get elected in the general election, the party is just going to go ahead and handle that at the convention. And Nikki Haley's not going to be the first choice there either. They'll probably try to draft Ron DeSantis back, and I'm sure Ron DeSantis will be willing to do it. So as much as I like the idea of a competition, I think that the results here are really telling us that there's not much of a competition. The only real competition right now is between Trump and Biden, and polls are beginning to make it look like he might actually be able to pull this off with, even with all the other stuff going on. The CBS News poll had him at 52% against Joe Biden. And the New York Times had him up 5, although not in a majority. I think it was like 47, 42, or 48, 43, where you see just Joe Biden collapsing. And this
Joe Biden, as a realistic candidate or one who might succeed, I think is lost. He's gone. But what was interesting in the time New York Times Siena poll, to me anyway, was that Trump beat Biden by two, I think it was. And the Fox poll had him beating Trump by four. But Nikki Haley in both polls beat Biden by nine. So I mean, that should be a warning sign to Trump that he needs to hone his image, but he's not going to do it.
Well, you know, and again, I mean, he's succeeded once, he's failed once, using the same persona both times. And I think he just figures nobody's going to be fooled.
Right.
Nobody's going to be fooled if he tries to change it at this point. As much as some of us would really like to see it, I don't think it's going to change anybody's minds. I think people will just start looking at him as inauthentic, and that has issues of its own. So, yeah.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So before we get to Joe Biden and the couple things that you wrote, I just want to address the media coverage of the Supreme Court decision. Now, we're recording this on Monday. And just to give the background on this, we didn't realize that the Colorado case was going to be handed down until late Sunday night, when the Supreme Court suddenly added Monday as a decision delivery day. And everybody kind of understood what that meant. This was Trump versus Anderson, the Colorado disqualification case. Now, the Supreme Court, I was actually very pleasantly surprised. I was very pleasantly not too surprised, but it was the extent of the, to whatever extent the surprise was there, it was very pleasant to see it come down unanimously, because this really should be cut and dried con law. The states don't have the authority to disqualify presidential candidates. They just don't. That takes a federal authority to do, because these are federal offices. And, you know, and I've written about this a bunch since Colorado started taking this thing up. And I was very pleased to see that my analysis was actually spot on, even with the three liberal justices. Now, they dissented on another part of this while you know, sort of vociferously affirming their overall concurrence on the issue of whether states had the jurisdiction to do this. They were unhappy that the majority went a little farther than that and said it takes Congress to disqualify a candidate, when they said, no, if you know, if you're convicted of a federal insurrection crime, that should be sufficient, which I think is actually a pretty good argument. But it's still unanimous. The states can't do this. The states just simply don't have the authority to do this.
Obviously, they were reading you, Ed.
You know, I am very happy, and I just want to say thank you to all of my friends at the Supreme Court, all nine of you. All nine of you, and I did not know that. So I feel pretty good about that, actually, Andrew.
Yeah, you should.
But here's what I want to talk about, which is this absolute freakout in the media on a 9-0 decision that basically said the Constitution says what it says, right? Which is that, you know, this is for Congress to deal with, not the states, on an amendment that was added explicitly to remove authority from states and grant it to the federal government. 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments were written specifically for that purpose, so that states couldn't backtrack on individual civil rights after the end of slavery. And you have people going nuts on this thing. It's a meltdown. Supreme Court's, you know, abandoning democracy. They're abandoning the democracy, by the way, by allowing a candidate to be on the ballot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
well, and didn't the states, bunch of states, southern states, wouldn't put Lincoln on the ballot when he was running. So,
well, I think
this should be settled by now.
Well, and that's actually a pretty good precedent, that why the 14th Amendment says that this is left to Congress and not to the states to determine, is because of stuff like that, right? Yeah. I want to just focus really briefly, media criticism wise, about the legal experts, right? The Lawrence Tribes, who was the guy that was caught? I can't think of his name. Jeffrey Toobin. Jeffrey Toobin's, even Michael Luttig, who's normally a pretty smart guy, saying that the Colorado decision was unassailable. even though it was 4-3, right? Even though three of the seven justices in Colorado actually assailed the decision. I mean, what does that say about you know, the media coverage of this? I think it's been terrible.
Yeah, it says that they have a narrative, and no matter what facts are, they're going to stick with the narrative because the narrative rules. And it's sad. It's very, very sad. I mean, I know that's why I like what DeSantis is doing in Florida, you know, with the DEI stuff. It's just stand up, and the only way to do it is to fight it is to squash it. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think the people you mentioned, they're not real journalists. They participate because of the fame aspect in journalism, and that helps them with pocketbook issues. But boy,
yeah,
it's sad. It's a continuation, and it will further erode the media's credibility, even though I see Morning Consult has a new poll out saying, well, media credibility is back up. Is back up a little. I don't see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see that either. I don't see that at all. And I think that their faceplant on this is not going to help them rebuild their credibility on this, especially when you're talking about a 9-0 decision. That's about as black letter con law as you can get. I mean, this was always a stupid idea. And the fact that Democrats played along with it shows desperation. And I think more than that, I mean, I think it really shows a sort of sneering at voters, right?
Ed, you have to understand, they're so dumb. They don't get the narrative. But I mean, if we dig in a little bit to this, this is a good issue you raise about the media. They have credibility with their posse, and that's what they're feeding, because their posse buys the narrative, and so they're supporting the narrative. And it's not about the sort of common narrative or common accepted set of rules and facts that we used to have when we had a media that was by and large, well, certainly much more objective than it is today. So, right. So they're playing for clicks and views. I think that's all. I mean, if Rachel Maddow suddenly came out and said, you know, the Supreme Court majority has a good point, you know, there'd be a few thousand TVs clicking off because they don't want to hear it. People, Americans don't want to hear it. They can't handle things that don't fit their own image, their own narrative, because they're not interested. They haven't been taught how to think independently and critically anymore. It's sad. It really is. And that's this woke thing is corroding, you know. If you have like those high school students in Virginia that the principals didn't tell them they won national merit scholarships because they didn't want to hurt the feelings of those who didn't.
Yeah.
Well, okay. It's not okay. That's an end to American exceptionalism. And that's their narrative. That's their woke narrative, which brings everybody down. Everybody gets a trophy.
Right. Right. By the way, Glenn Reynolds has a good piece on his Substack talking about the Supreme Court rules, pundits are fools, which I'll stick in the headlines.
Who said that?
Glenn Reynolds.
Oh.
He's got an essay in his Substack, you know, the Instapundit. But yeah, this is on his personal Substack. That's not what the headline is. That's what I take away from it. The headline says the Supreme Court rules, and the subhead is many pundits are fools. So,
yeah,
I just sort of condensed it a little bit.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Your credibility is going out the window now.
Woo, it's gone. You know, A moment ago, I was personal friends with all nine Supreme Court justices. Days are over.
Nobody believes a cough of yours.
All right. Well, let's talk about a cough of yours then, because you've got a couple of great pieces up over at Red State. And I have to ask you, because I'm curious about what your source was for this post. The only good news in Joe Biden's State of the Union, it's his last. Are you sure about that? Because I'd really like to bank on that.
That's what I believe. I mean, there's no link to it, but it was me playing to my crowd, Ed, fitting my narrative.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, no, there were a lot of dissenting views and agreeing views in the comments, but I've only been involved covering politics since 1967 or 68, so I can be wrong, obviously, but
a mere rookie,
but not every year, of course, but I just can't believe the evidence is so overwhelming that Biden is incompetent. And I don't know about everybody, because what is it, 24% think he's doing a great job, but 70, almost 80%, I think, even of Democrats say that he's too old to be president. So that impression is embedded and you can't change it. That's like magic marker. That's indelible. That's made now. You can't suddenly, Joe Biden cannot come out and be erudite and suave and sophisticated. He is who he is, and he's decaying. And we've seen it, especially in the last year. We didn't see it in 2020 because he hid up with the cover story of COVID in his basement, knocking off his work days at 10:30. I just can't believe that the Democrats are so crazy and suicidal that they're going to stick with him. Yeah, it would be messy. No matter how well they did, you know, Joe Biden says, you know, I've had a change of mind. That beach in Maryland is just too attractive. And I want to write my book and tell my true story for $60 million or whatever he's going to get. Kamala and I are resigning, and Kamala can compete with everybody else for the nomination. And then, of course, Pritzker and Newsom and the other little critters come out of the woodwork. And so we have a grand fight in Chicago, which is what we had in Chicago in 1968. I was there at the convention. I was there when Richard Daley, when Abe Rivikoff was in the cabinet, I think, then. Yeah, Johnson convinced him to quit the Supreme Court and go in his cabinet. What an insane decision. Anyway, he was speaking and denouncing the hoodlum police. And Richard Daley was in the front row going like this. he was cutting the throat. He wasn't cutting him off. He was cutting the throat. That's Chicago, you know.
What was I thinking? That's the Chicago way. I should better.
You know, I had a high school friend who went into Chicago. He was a lawyer, went into Chicago politics, and got elected to the city council of 50 members as a liberal, obviously Democrat in Chicago, but as a liberal Democrat, but a maverick. And he was always the 49-1 votes. He was always creating trouble. I mean, it was good trouble. It was reform-minded trouble, but they hated him. And so his clients had a lot of trouble, and the cars in front of his law office would get towed by the police by accident. He said to me, I started running, Andy, to get in shape, but I quit because you can't knock anybody down jogging. and that's Chicago politics. You can't, yeah. you want to knock them down. It's fun to watch. Well, at least in when I was there in '60s and '70s and '80s. But this guy who's mayor now, boy, what a piece of work he is. But that's not the real Chicago politics. And someday it'll take a while. But someday I'll tell the story where I wrote about a precinct captain and how he worked. And those guys are really something else in Daley's. This is Daley's machine. But they it was very impressive. And the stuff he did and followed up on when it was my secretary was involved, she, not with him, but she got mugged and he rescued her. And it's just, and so she ended up voting for the man who was mayor, voting to reelect the man who was mayor when she got mugged at night. And that's the way Chicago politics works. It worked. The city worked. It doesn't work anymore. But that's how Daley stayed in for, what was it, 21 years? And then his son came along. Well, yeah.
So the State of the Union speech, they're going to try to set this thing up as a comeback, right? Yeah. And I mean, basically, if he manages to complete sentences, the media is primed to say, oh, see all of
what
this.
What a job. Yeah.
Right. I mean, am I not? I mean, first off, they're going to make sure that he sleeps until 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. And then gets a huge dose of meds.
Yeah. The big vitamin B12 shot.
Well, in the columns, and I went through some of the things that he cannot talk about, and there's many of them, but Afghanistan, that disaster, that's when his plummet in the polls began, the withdrawal and the lethal withdrawal. The border is the festering thing, and Gallup had a poll last week saying that this has become the number one issue in voters' minds overwhelmingly. And I did some research and in the column, and I mentioned that Biden has allowed, by his actions of erasing Trump's border controls and not doing anything else, he has allowed around 9.5 million illegals into the country, undocumented, untracked. And that is the population. I don't have it in front of me, but that is that's more illegals now in the country than the combined population of Chicago, Houston, Phoenix, San Antonio, and one other city. It's just overwhelming. You think about the decades now that taxpayers, including myself and you, will be paying for the rehab of society that they can't handle now. The housing, the schooling, bilateral or bilingual education they're going to need to do, the welfare, job training. I mean, it just goes on. And he's done, Biden did it willfully and knowingly. There's no explanation, credible explanation.
Yeah.
And of course, the next thing is, well, they're here. We can't get rid of 9 million people. So let's give them the vote. That's the way it creeps in California. Well, they're here. Let's give them ID cards. Well, they're here. Let's give them school. Let them into the schools, the universities.
Dreamers. They're dreamers. Yeah.
And I thought one of Trump's most powerful lines when he was president was Americans have dreamers too.
Yeah.
So what about the people that elected Biden and that he took an oath to protect and hasn't?
Yeah. You know, again, we're going to hear a lot of this nonsense during the State of the Union speech, because that's generally what you hear during State of the Union speeches, right? And generally speaking, they're just slogans and nonsense. It's, I mean, there's nothing terribly compelling.
You're right. But people will be watching to see, like you said, if he can get it out.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to collapse like the movie Dave, but he's he's gonna if he has. Can you imagine in front? They had 27 million watching last year. I think it'll be more this year. But can you imagine if he has one of those 14-second brain freezes, and those eyes and that mouth open, and watch him walking along the path in at the border when he did his 19-minute survey of the troubled border for cameras, walking along with his arms in front, stick both arms, not swinging, but sticking out, I guess, in case he fell, or motionless by his side. And then at some point, walking along the trail and the border people are briefing him, he salutes something on the Texas riverbank. The president finds something he needs to salute. That's what I said. I can't believe they're going to go ahead with him.
I mean, they're kind of out of time to do anything else, but we'll see. What was the other thing that you had up in here? And I want to make sure that we at least mention it. They're both about the State of the Union address.
Different takes. Yeah. That was the audio one. Those audios seem to be, popular. A lot of people want to, you know, for five-minute editorial that they can listen to while they're driving. So that's kind of fun to do. It's like you and I do, except it's shorter and it's scripted, and it's just sort of roughly scripted. It's just me. That's right. And we have the main man here, you know, Ed. I mean, the handsome guy at Waldorf and Statler.
Yeah, I don't even know which guy is which, so I couldn't tell you which
one. Well, one of them has a little more hair than the other one.
Well, that would be you.
I'm on the way with you, but I don't shave it. So,
well, I got to tell you, even if I wasn't shaving, I wouldn't have as much on top as you do. Just briefly, I'll just go into this briefly because I know we're going to have to get going here in a minute, but. For several years, I was hanging on to 12 little hairs at the top of my head. I wasn't doing comb overs because I don't like comb overs, but I just would never. I was more than 12, but you know, it was not a whole lot more than 12 of these hairs that were still growing organically on the top of my head. And when I finally decided I was going to shave my head, that was the first thing that went off. It was like, I kid you not, it was stunning. To see them gone, it was like even with that, I'm used to it now. I'm over the trauma, but clearly the trauma is still the trauma. You know,
I never saw my dad without his mustache, and I shaved my mustache off one time for a month, and I didn't tell anybody. I just shaved it off, and you see the family, and when they walk in, and the family, what the heck, Dad without hair under his nose.
Yeah. I shaved mine off shortly before my granddaughter was born. My first granddaughter was born.
Well, you still have facial hair there.
Well, no, I grew it back. But I shaved it off because I remembered what my friend's babies did with hanging off my beard. So I decided to shave it off. And my son saw me. It was the first time he'd ever really seen me without facial hair. And he just broke out into hysterical laughter. Really, wasn't really the reaction I was hoping.
Right.
And I grew it back in years after that. I think my oldest granddaughter may have even been in high school at that point in time. She was, in fact. And she hated it. I went to her volleyball game once, and I'm sitting there across the court from her, and I wave at her, and she does this back to me.
Oh, kids are fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean it was all in fun. She's a lot of fun. She's got a great sense of humor, and she knows that she can tease me because we tease each other, and so it was fine. But
well, in my my youngest is in the Air Force, and every March, I think it is, or April, the guys in his unit grow a beard, and then in October they all grow mustaches. So it's kind of fun to kind of fun to watch. Yeah, facial hair is fun. So grow them if you got them.
Grow them if you got them. All right, we got to wrap up. But yeah, any jokes of the week?
I got a couple of old ones here. There's I think I saw this on online. It said there's a new trend in office life: naming lunches. Today I had a lunch named Kevin. let's see. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I've got one here for you.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
But I've got one here for you.
Okay.
What's the difference between an insurance company actuary and a mafia actuary?
Oh, what?
An insurance company actuary can tell you how many people will die this year. A mafia actuary can name them.
You know, that's what remember Woody Allen saying, that in the mafia, death is one of the worst things that can happen to you.
I got another one here for you. My wife rang me at the pub and said, "If you're not home in 10 minutes, I'm giving the dinner I cooked you to the dog." I was home in 5 minutes because I'd hate to see anything happen to that dog.
That's a good one. Well, here's an old one. An anonymous scam caller called and said, "I have all your passwords." I grabbed a pencil and paper and said, "Thank God, what are they?"
All right, well, we're going to leave it at that.
Okay.
Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com. As always, so much fun doing this. When we come back next week, we can talk about what happened on Super Tuesday. And maybe
I have to look up what comes after that. Super Wednesday. I don't
let know. Down Wednesday. Let Down Wednesday.
Let Down Wednesday. Yeah, right.
If you're Nikki Haley or if you're Dean Phillips, it's Let Down Wednesday.
So, well, you know, I worked for a politician, and he said, you know, the thing about campaigns, he said, the best day of every campaign is the day you announce. After that, everything is downhill. You just want to delay the bottom until after the election. So anyway, yeah. Okay. All right. I'll see you next week, Ed. Thanks, everybody.